Mm-hmm. And then you have been involved in the science camp for many years, haven't you?
Yes.
When was the first time you started to come?
I think it might have been, you know, and I don't remember the year. Uh-huh. I don't remember how many years we've been doing this. But I've basically started from like the first or second year that this camp started. And you may be able to find out what year those.
Okay.
Right offhand, I don't remember. But since about the first or second year.
And since then, you kind of supported it every year by coming.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes. I enjoy coming out here very much so. Originally, it was destined for a prophet, mm-hmm. making a program by following the Crow Canyon archaeology,
the dig site,
uh-huh. Uh-huh. Their Crow Canyon program down there.
Uh-huh.
So they, you know, you dig for the artifacts, and down at Crow Canyon in Colorado,
mm-hmm.
They have people who love to do this kind of thing come and pay to come and dig the artifacts, mm-hmm. but they don't get to keep the artifacts.
Right,
they just.
Sure.
They just pay for the enjoyment, you know, for uh-huh. their own purpose, whatever they, you know,
right, yes.
do it for,
uh-huh.
to come and dig. And so it didn't end up very profitable here because we are here up in Alaska,
mm-hmm.
very remote,
mm-hmm.
into the bush, as we call it up here. And so transportation up here is very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And so between transportation and the joy of paying to dig garden artifacts for their own research was very expensive for them, so we didn't get many.
Mm.
You know, like down in Colorado at the Crow Canyon site, they're you can drive there from many, you know, it's
right.
much easier. Mm-hmm. So that was a lot better there. So we decided that at the same time that we did this, they had the program, we also had other programs here. You know, we started bringing in elders,
mm-hmm.
to kind of start picking up some of the language that we had lost, our Aleutic language.
Mm-hmm.
And so we decided, well, you know, if we're going to have kids, if we're going to be here and pick up our language, why don't we have kids here? Kids should be here.
Mm-hmm.
So at Apognak Native Corporation, we decided, well, we'll have the children here. So we decided to bring in the children. So that's what we started as bringing in the elders and with the children.
Mm-hmm.
And so we started to, and we brought in some other people who were from the university who were also linguists, a linguist, Dr. Mm-hmm. Jeff Lear from up there, to help us with kind of trying to teach.
Mm-hmm.
And unbeknownst to many of us, there was, they had developed an Aleutic alphabet.
Mm-hmm.
Which we weren't familiar with, and so we always all learned how to speak
mm-hmm.
through listening, you know, teaching from our sure. from our families, mm-hmm. you know, as growing up. And so, like I was mentioning last night to you, that many years ago, our families, our parents, were prevented from speaking the Aleutic language. So we were so we didn't get to learn as much, and our parents were punished by the teachers in the school if they spoke any other language. So the message we received from that is that, hey, our language was not a good one.
Mm-hmm.
And so, in essence, we all became ashamed of it, ashamed of being Native. You know, we didn't want to be considered Native if we could help it. And many of us could pass by because of our mixed race, that many of us could pass for not being Native, and so we chose to do that a lot of the times when we were in the bigger cities. Mm-hmm. And so, so in essence, our language and culture kind of got lost, and at the same time, we sort of lost our identity, or rather, we just, you know, chose not to practice mm-hmm. that. And so since then, of course, the Native people proposed to our Congress mm-hmm. that, hey, when Russia sold Alaska, they did, in fact, didn't really own Alaska. We did. The country land was ours. Mm-hmm. And so we should have the right to that land. So that's how the land claims came about, mm-hmm. that they reimbursed us for land that we couldn't, you know, claim back, mm-hmm. and paid the natives of Alaska mm-hmm. $900 and some million mm-hmm. for them to split up around natives, mm-hmm. and so. Made up into 12 regions, and of course the Kodiak region is one of the 12 regions. Mm-hmm. And so, like I mentioned last night, if the land claims, you know, didn't do anything else for us, I think the biggest purpose, I think the land claims has done a lot for us, but the most important thing I feel, mm-hmm. my opinion, is that the best thing we have accomplished from the land claims is that we were able to realize who we are as Native people, and that we are a people with just as much, our values were just as important to us as other values are to other people. Mm-hmm. And so we became assertive mm-hmm. and started programs where we would try to learn our language and teach our language to the younger generation mm. and to try to regain our culture through the lifestyle that our ancestors had mm. the subsistence lifestyle mm-hmm. an old you know, I always said that, you know, we may have a lot of low-income people in our family, but I don't think there's any poverty around here. Mm-hmm. Because as long as we have the land and sea, we will never starve. And an old saying goes, you know, an old saying goes from many, many years back is that when the tide is out, the table is set.
Mm-hmm. That's how people used to say.
Mm-hmm. That's an old favorite saying to this day. When the tide is out, the table is set. And we don't feel with the, you know, with because of the land, our lifestyle is the land and sea, that we will never go hungry. Mm-hmm. And so it's been wonderful having this. And one of the, you know, one of the ways that we've been able to try to accomplish this, gaining our identities and our culture, is through programs like we have here at Digapognak. Mm. You know, this is one of many other programs, and it's being encouraged more and more all over. Mm-hmm. That
Alaska, you mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. That there's, you know, there's many different types of programs. We've got, you know, like the Spirit Camp that mm-hmm. goes on, and Digapognak here, as we refer to it, and many other, I think, group camps, retreat camps that mm. people have that are bringing out more and more the lifestyle. Mm. But we here sometimes also concentrate on the language.
I see. So all those programs, as you mentioned, like spirit camps or Diga Fogna, other camps and the science camps, they all have a sort of same goals, language and regain your culture through lifestyle.
I don't know if they all seem to have the same goal, but it's more in the, you know, in the Eleutic lifestyle,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
which I think, I don't know if they so much concentrate on the language
mm-hmm.
as much as more the lifestyle
mm-hmm.
and the cultural aspect.
I see. Looking at this, you know, science camp you've been supporting, what do you value most doing this science camp?
What do I value most? I think the community, the kinship we feel with each other,
mm-hmm.
the being able to share our stories, reminisce, share with our children.
Mm-hmm.
Out here, there's no telephones, no TV, no electronic toys allowed,
mm-hmm.
you know, no electronic toys allowed for children. They can't bring any of their little handheld electronic toys at all, nothing like that.
Mm-hmm.
So we're you know, working with one and our environment,
mm-hmm.
you know. We are close with our environment, we are close to our land. We hear the birds singing, we hear the rustle and bustle of other wildlife, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Little ones like our squirrels mm-hmm. and different things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I think you're yourself here.
Mm-hmm.
You become yourself. You're relaxed and you become yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You're not, nobody tries to impress anybody else. You're just your own self,
mm.
and to me, I think that's that. You, what else can make you feel good
mm.
besides, you know,
mm-hmm.
being yourself?
It's
you
crazy
know.
Are they? Is it cold?
So that's a value. I don't know what you'd call it. I don't know what way you'd call it a value.
Mm.
I don't, what the term would be, but that's a great value to
mm.
me.
Do you see that happening to children too? When they're here, are they different from their in cities at home?
I think so. You know, they're you know, it's enjoyable when, you know, we've had times when we've been here by ourselves, you know, just
mm-hmm.
older people,
mm-hmm.
and it's been kind of quiet. It's been nice,
mm-hmm.
but it's quite kind.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, you hear those kids out there.
Mm-hmm.
They're enjoying themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They are thoroughly enjoying themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the things that our camp leaders stress, of course, is respect.
Mm-hmm.
Respect for the elders,
mm-hmm.
which is something that's been lost
mm-hmm.
over the years. And we're trying to, and we as elders are trying to encourage respect for everybody. Respect for everybody,
mm-hmm.
you know, because respect, and I think in our society as a whole, all over,
mm-hmm.
in our country, I speak just for, you know, that respect is gone, you know, there's not
mm-hmm.
much of it,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's very little respect in this day and age,
mm-hmm.
there's so much violence
mm-hmm.
that we, you know, I think we need to try to gain back that respect. And if we can get that respect and responsibility, you know, some of those things that I think help a person to go forward, you know, and just to enjoy feeling good about yourself.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that's something which is lacking?
Feeling good about yourself?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
Yes. If you feel good about yourself, you feel good about everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
In order to feel good about everything else, you can't do it unless you feel good about yourself. You have to start with yourself, within yourself, you know. Mm-hmm. Feel good about yourself first, and then everything else is great, you know. The world is wonderful when you feel good about yourself, you know. You can do anything.
Right. Why do you think people can't feel good about themselves nowadays in their own environment?
Why? I think you know, I don't know. In our culture, I think one of the things is the loss of identity is something that, you know, I can only speak for our culture there.
Sure, you couldn't feel good about yourself being.
Yeah, you couldn't. You know, loss of identity. You know, you don't. If you know you're looked down on, you know, when you're in a minority in this country, and there's many minorities, as you're aware, you know, all the ethnic groups are all minorities. Women, you know, are I don't know if they're a minority, but they're considered, they're, you know,
weaker
than the male, yeah. And just everybody, you know, every ethnic group, you know, and so that alone is you know, will make you feel less than whole, you know, less than whole, and so. It causes a lot of problems in your life. And if one person in the family has problems, it affects the whole family, you know. And so there's a lot of drinking, drugs. You know, why do people take drugs? Mm-hmm. Why do they take drinking? You know, I get shocked nowadays when I hear more and more about, excuse me, when I hear more and more about how much money drugs is bringing into our society, how much drugs are in our society, and the cost of that, you know. Excuse me. Somebody's getting rich, and I don't know. In the meantime, we're attacking, you know, more younger and younger generations. And of course, the drinking too. And so that's a low self-esteem, you know, because people aren't going to tolerate that, you know. Mm-hmm. A lot of people won't. And so it's very scary when to see your children, grandchildren and so on coming into this world, you know, wondering what are they going to face next.
Right. So just coming back to this science camp, you mentioned respect. Is there any other things that you would like them to learn through camp?
In the camp? Well, respect and learn. I know you have to go on and meet the challenges of the world, you know, the Western world. And that's okay. You're not going to be able to help that. That's in our midst already now. We're being very much influenced by the Western way of life, the Western world. But one thing I'd like to see them learn from around here is that to remember how their ancestors lived. Not to forget where they came from, how their ancestors lived, and if they can just gain that knowledge and know how people went hunting, the way they did hunting, they made their own weapons, you know, traps and such, and made their own clothes, you know. And and you can, like I said, you know, if you don't depend on Safeway, you'll never starve being here. Mm-hmm. If Safeway happens to close us one day, in Kodiak anyhow, we won't starve. And if they can learn here the ways how to prepare the foods, the types of foods that our ancestors ate mm-hmm. in the past. And there's many, you know, there's, of course, a lot of our wild stock has been planted, such as the elk and the, mm-hmm. and the moose, or not the moose, but the deer,
uh-huh.
the goat, uh-huh. you know, there's mm-hmm. very few, I think, original to the island,
right.
you know, and right offhand, I can't tell you now, but there's very few, the rest have been planted. But even then before, you know, they still managed.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, everything, we always felt that everything from the ocean was edible,
mm.
you know, from the fish to the shellfish, the salmon, the clams,
mm-hmm.
which clams and you've got snails. They used to eat the snails. The Chinese cat, they call them. You know, have you ever seen those? They're these little Chinese cat. The shells, they come to a point.
Mm-hmm.
It's
a shell.
It's a shell.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
You see it on the beach all over.
Uh-huh.
It's just a little. It's just a little. It just kind of shaped. You know. Those Chinese hats with that point in the top. The Chinese cap.
Oh, okay.
that. It just resembles that shape.
Okay.
You know, uh-huh. and that's why they call them the Chinese cap shell. Because that's exactly what it looks like, except that it's a shell. You know, just they're just from big to bigger.
Oh,
know.
Okay.
But if I find one, I'll show it to you.
Right, thank you.
There's all kinds of shells
mm-hmm.
down there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's mussels, of course, mm-hmm. and different kinds of clams. And there's some the badarka, which is the hiluk, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then the uduks, the sea urchin.
Uh-huh.
Not the sea. Is that the one with the prickly spine?
Yes, uh-huh.
Uh-huh, and of course the octopus and, you know, everything. You know,
uh-huh.
Calamari, you know,
mm-hmm.
The squid.
Yeah, uh-huh.
everything, we feel everything in the ocean is edible, you know. You never go hungry. Like
yeah.
I say, when the tide is out, you just, you know,
mm-hmm.
you'll get it. And of course, there's always been the ducks, ptarmigan,
mm-hmm.
you know. And the deer, we have elk now, and they've had reindeer and
mm-hmm.
bear,
mm-hmm.
bear, of course the seal and sea lion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Until when did you eat those food more? Nowadays you don't, you hardly eat those.
Like I said, we're being influenced very much by the Western world
mm-hmm.
and getting more dependent on Safeway, and we've got things coming in like McDonald's,
mm-hmm.
Pizza Hut, you know, pizza places, and chicken, or Kentucky Fried Chicken,
yeah.
I think, yeah.
But when you were small, you were eating more of those.
Oh, yes, mm-hmm. yeah, yeah, a lot more of that.
Flora, I'm borrowing your bag just for now. Do you need it now? Sure. Do you have warm clothing in here?
We're just using it as a stand, huh?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Actually, a headroom we could have used too.
Oh, that's
mm-hmm.
right. Very similar.
Yes, exactly.
Right. So your father
was a Norwegian.
That's right.
And he came over from Norway.
Right.
And he came over and he fished over in Karlik. Originally, I'm from Karlik.
Uh-huh.
I was born in Karlik.
But you had somebody who provided you food, land.
Yes,
food.
My mother and her stepfather, and my
oh,
stepfather,
right.
you know,
uh-huh.
another family. You know, whoever went out hunting, it was sharing. And
mm-hmm.
that's what we did back then. Everybody shared,
mm-hmm.
you know. When you got something, you shared with other families, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's a there was always somebody who got something.
You did, right? Go ahead.
Something?
I did casting for their shoes.
Whose shoes?
Mine and Andrea's.
Yeah. So, you had eaten seal meat and all those things more?
Yeah. As a young girl, I remember I've eaten bear.
Oh, have you?
Mm-hmm. Many years ago, yes. But, no, as a young girl, when I was about 12, I think I went down during World War II. All during World War II years, I spent down in Seattle with my dad.
Oh,
actually, 6 years in all.
Right.
I stayed down with my dad, and his, you know, he boarded me out to a family.
Right. It was a different lifestyle compared to you had?
Very much so. It was a Norwegian family, so I was exposed then to the Norwegian culture.
Yeah.
Not as much as I would have, I wished I could have, you know. You know, the thing is, you know, when you're younger, when you get older as now, I wished I'd have paid more attention to what was going on, paid more attention to what, you know, how things were then.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Only after you get older you think, my gosh, you know, that's the same thing with the medicine.
Mm. Oh, okay. That's
medicine, you know, our ancestors medicated themselves from the land and the sea. Also, they also use it for medication.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, you know, that they there were certain roots and plants that they used for medicating themselves
mm-hmm.
for different things and many different ways of treating themselves.
Uh-huh. And you didn't.
I didn't record a lot of that stuff. Although there has been some books written on them.
Right.
You know.
Uh-huh.
But that's another thing, you know, that they didn't back then. They did, and you know, more and more medicine now, you know, is coming out that, you know, is being processed from the land. You know that a lot of our medication is, you know, and a lot of the doctors are, you know, a lot of that is coming through to the doctors. You know,
mm-hmm.
They're using that,
mm-hmm. That's true.
You know, to do more, more for medicine.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how they did back then too. They depended on the land,
mm-hmm.
and some things from the sea.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And like, and when they caught, when they hunted, nothing was thrown away. Everything was eaten.
Mm-hmm.
A seal, like you saw yesterday, the intestines, the liver,
mm-hmm.
I think the lungs were used, you know,
mm-hmm.
and they used all of that for, and they ate it, you know, they cooked it and ate it. And the stomach, where, you know, where they, yesterday they cut it up to see what was eaten in there, but the stomach, remember they used to take that and they'd blow it up.
Right.
And it like a balloon.
Uh-huh.
They'd blow it up and they used it to store the seal fat in. And other things, berries, I think maybe,
right.
You know.
When you were a child they were doing that or they had stopped doing that?
I remember them doing that when I was young. Yes, uh-huh. I remember seeing that happen.
Mm.
Another way they preserved fish sometimes is buried it. Now, I'm not too familiar with that, but they buried it to me, I thought it was rotten.
Uh-huh.
But I guess they must have knew if it was or wasn't. I don't know, but they ate it.
Mm-hmm. The meat.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
Fish. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Fish, yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Now, I don't know anything about that. All I know is that they did that.
Mm-hmm.
And of course they smoked and they not so much canned, but they smoked and they salted salmon.
Mm-hmm. To preserve.
To preserve that.
Right.
And And I think, like, in the ground also, that, but smoking and salting were the two ways. Mm-hmm. Now, where they got salt, I don't know, you know, back then, but I remember they salted it, and we still do to this day, you know, smoke and salt. And of course, the ducks and ptarmigan, you know, you caught them as you needed them, as you wanted them to eat them. And of course, there was no seasons on them like they are today.
Right.
You got those whenever you felt, you know, you wanted to. But nothing went to waste.
Right.
They didn't over harvest.
Right.
They knew how to, you know. Mm-hmm. And they used like seagull eggs, mm-hmm. you know, seagull eggs, got those. And they knew exactly when to get them before they started, you know, hatching them. Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so there was just, it's just amazing the things, how they were able to. Mm. And of course, the banya, mm-hmm. cleaning, you know, it was, and that they, I think maybe once a week, and it was a lot of times, they'd invite other people to join them in a banya, and if one family had a banya, if they had one, you know, other people would come, and they,
right.
they just shared that, you
I
know.
See.
Yeah.
Did you say you were raised in Kodiak? Or a different village?
I grew up in Karluk till I was about 12. Then I went down south, and I came back as a teenager, I think 17. Mm-hmm. And so I was more or less back and forth to Kodiak. By that time, World War II, of course, was over with, and so the influence of the war brought in military to Kodiak.
Right.
With military came, you know, the outside roads, building up roads, and more jobs, you know. And so I kind of was back and forth between Kodiak and Karluk at that time until, you know, got married.
I see.
Yeah.
What would you like, sort of, how do you say, while you are in camp, like elders in residence, what would you like to do to the students?
In Kodiak?
No, here in the camp, in the science camp.
Uh-huh.
What do you consider your role?
My role?
Uh-huh.
Well, as a originally, when it first started, Afognak asked Dennis and I to be host and hostess here. We came out as a host and hostess.
Oh.
And at that time, and that was during that Elder Week, I think, camp, you know, the
only
camp.
Elders, only for elders.
Pardon me?
Only for elders.
Yeah, it was just only for elders.
Uh-huh.
That was when we started the language thing. That's okay. When they got Jeff Lear to come down here.
Uh-huh.
It was just that 1 week. That's before science camp
uh-huh.
started. And we started as, we were asked if we would be host and hostess. So they got other elders. And so what we did at that time was, of course, Jeff Lear from the University of Alaska, Fairbanks, mm-hmm. came down. He's a linguist.
Mm-hmm.
And we also had one of his students, Barry Ash,
mm.
who was a young student at the university up there,
mm-hmm.
who spoke fluent.
Oh, is that right?
Aleut.
Is he was a man?
Uh huh.
Is he Aleutic? Or
he's I think he's up from the Homer area.
Oh, okay.
The area, the Chugach, I think uh-huh. he in that area. He's from. Nanwalek.
Right, so he's native.
Yeah, he's
uh-huh.
native.
Spoke fluent Aleut.
He's, yeah, as a young boy, it was very enlightening to see a young boy speak so fluently, who spoke it so freely without hiding it.
Oh.
You know, he mm-hmm. spoke it so freely and so happily, mm-hmm. you know. And so we had them come down, and they helped us. Jeff kind of helped set up the alphabet, and we were looking at the alphabet, and then other elders like ourselves and Dennis, we of course were trying to record some of the we videotaped, and I remember videotaping the lessons and talking back and forth of the Olympic language.
I see.
And that's what it started off to be. And so, of course, then other, and then as we, you know, needed other camps, started, other organizations started to want to use this camp for their purposes, such a science camp. Spirit Camp used it for a couple of years here also. And there was just other programs, I think, that we invite to come and, you know, they come and want to use the space for their programs, which all revolve around the Olympic lifestyle, you know. So next week, the next 3 weeks, after this next week, but then the last 3 weeks of camp life out here is going to be a recovery camp. I'm sure you've heard of that one.
Yeah, I heard that. Mm-hmm.
Yes. That's going to be interesting to see how that works.
Yes. You'll be here?
No. Mm-hmm. No. It's just going to be camp, and I think for the first 2 weeks they're going to have the recovery people. And then the last week, I think they're going to have their families come out and join them for the last week. So, my question on that, I don't know if it's a concern or a question, is what are they going to do after 3 weeks with these people? Yeah. You know, it's a serious program. Mm-hmm. And you're going to be dealing with people's emotions. And to me, you got to be very careful. Program, recovery programs all over. But this one, the purpose of this one here, having it here, is to, it's for the Native people. It's to do what we've been doing, recapture that culture, having them regain their identity back. In case that's one of the reasons, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to be living kind of like, hopefully, the like we are doing, you know, some learning about the culture, Native culture, and the lifestyle, and probably. I don't know so much about the language. I don't know if they're ready for anything like that. But then at least bringing them back to regaining some identity is the way I think is what is going. I don't know. I'm not involved in that program at all. I'd like to be.
Mm-hmm. I mean, if he's going to continue, maybe ask.
I'd like to because I want to know what's going to happen after that, you know. Are they going to go back into society, and what then, you know?
But similar thing is for those students, you know, they are from different places.
Yes.
And this is only for 1 week, for, you know, 6 days for children.
With the kids here,
yes. And what happens, you know, once go back and rest of the year, you know, how, what would they learn out of this camp and, you know.
Well, you know Terry's science camp, you know Terry Schneider?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Carly's working this week. We have that organization in town, Native Education of the Aleutic region.
Uh-huh.
I am a member of that board.
Right.
I'm an elder member of that board. And she's got, I think there's Terry, of course, and I think Carly's on there. She's got several of us, and she's got a couple of us elders involved in that board. And we meet periodically. And what we're working on right now is to working on getting our language into the school system, getting it so that it's one of the courses.
Right.
That an option for the kids to choose to attend a course in the school system. And that's what we're trying to do there. And we're working on the immersion school.
Right.
You know.
Do you have any idea, like,
you know, very little. If anybody speaks, it's just within themselves, amongst themselves, not out in the open. I really don't know. More people, you know, the south end of the island, like Old Harbor and Aukiak, mainly those two. There's a lot more people speak that Arnis language in those two villages. I think a lot of their younger people also speak it. Not real young, but then, you know, like...
David's age?
Huh?
20s?
No, maybe even 30s. A little older than that. Maybe about in the 30s or 40s, you know, speak it more. I think most of them understand it. Like myself, I understand a lot of it. Mm-hmm. I have a struggle speaking it. More and more down there, this end of the island, it's not as much, you know, not as much.
Mm-hmm. So you were saying that this camp, sort of, the elements of this camp continues. The school might have language program later.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. We're working towards that, yes. And we meet with them in the school, you know. Try to get that going, and we have that, and we try to have gatherings, you know, as much as we can, and we try to we have what we call the a gathering in Kodiak. It's in the spring. We have it in the spring, the Tagukak, Ishkakulugu Tagukak. Yeah, Awakening Bear Ceremony. It's a gathering of the Aleutic people. We have a potluck, you know. And what we do there is we reward our people within our community who we feel have done and contributed. You know, so a reward system so that, you know, an encouragement. And this past year, we also rewarded some non-natives. We rewarded Bonnie and Jim Dillard as non-natives who have contributed so much to our culture.
That's right.
Who have given themselves. And we want to make sure we, you know, we let these people know how much we appreciate. So they were rewarded with a certificate.
Oh, that's nice.
Yes, I thought so. Yes, an overdue reward, but we're getting there, you know. And so we do that, and then another thing that happens in the fall is the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention. You've probably heard about that one. There's the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention, where it's mainly the not main, it's the Alaska, for AFN, Alaska Federation of Natives is made up of a member from each prophet region in the state of Alaska. The state of Alaska is made up of 12 regions, and also one 13th region from outside of all those that live outside of Alaska.
Right.
That's the 13th region.
Right.
Well, they're made up of a member from each prophet region, a member from each non-profit region, like Canada, and also a member from the villages that represents all villages from the region. You know, so each region has three representatives on that board, which make up 12.
Oh yeah,
36. Uh-huh. You know, but then they meet. And then in the fall, they have a convention of everybody.
All members of community.
Whoever wants to go, yeah. These regions, you know, all these 36 go, you know, well, who can, plus others, you know, mm-hmm. different villages sent, you know, up a lot of people. And it's the largest convention held in Alaska, the Native convention. And we go through all the different issues that affect our lives, and it's also a very strong, heavy, and strong political group there mm-hmm. that to work on some of the issues that we have problems with, such as our subsistence, mm-hmm. trying to fight for our subsistence, that's been a big one, mm-hmm. you know, because they've been trying to limit us,
yes.
And trying to, like, you know, is Kodiak a village, you know, mm-hmm. a rural or urban, you know, mm-hmm. and those kinds of things, you know, because if it's urban, then it prevents us from living that lifestyle.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And so those are issues that come up there. Education, health, all kinds of things, you know. And so it's a strong political group. And the state government, our legislators down in Juneau, they know, they pay attention to what is going on. Mm-hmm. They send their representatives to find to our convention to find out, you know, so that they're there, they know what is going on. Mm-hmm. Because they know they're going to hear from us after that, you know, with a right. lot of proposals. Mm-hmm. A lot of resolutions are passed, you know, and taken to.
Mm-hmm. I'm interested in that. Now, like yourself, those who live in Kodiak, they have city lifestyle,
yeah.
And then you mm-hmm. are not
and we enjoy that city lifestyle, yes.
Not depending on the subsistence anymore.
Not as much as we would like to, not as much as we used to. Mm-hmm. Like for myself, Dennis and I, you know, it's, we're limited so much. Mm-hmm. We're limited so much now, you know. Mm-hmm. By the rules of the state, you know, through Fish and Game, Fish and Wildlife, and others.
Hey, yeah. Have you seen Miss Carly anywhere?
Huh?
Maybe the yurt.
Check the yurt.
Okay.
And so we've been limited on a lot of that stuff. So it's easier and easier to just go and buy your stuff. You know, those of us that live in the city, because. We don't have easy access to the wildlife,
sure.
And plus our clams anymore. Like I said, we can't eat clams because now we've had so much red tide that they have declared our beaches unsafe year round. So we don't even go and pick clams anymore.
So it doesn't mean that you're away from those. Wildlife does not mean they are not important anymore to you, like fish or seal.
They're very important to us. It's just not as easy to, you know, it's not easy as easy accessible to us.
I see.
So it's easier to just go to Safeway.
But you wanted to make sure that the younger generations know how to live on
the land. Yeah, so that they have that option to, you know, if they choose to, you know, want to live that lifestyle, I want them to know how it's, what it's like, mm-hmm. how it's done.
And probably also culturally, that would sort of tie them into their identity as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right, I think, you know, you just, without me asking you, you just told me all very important things in a very powerful way. But just let me make sure that I asked you everything I wanted to ask you. Yeah, wow, this is, this is a kind of repetitive question maybe, but the what do you think, why did this kind of camp is necessary now to be organized?
Pardon me?
Why is this camp, this type of camp necessary to be organized?
Why is this camp uh-huh. necessary to continue being organized or to be organized?
Yeah, to be organized, to continue to be organized. Can people say from Old Harbor, you know, we have some village kids, can village kids just stay in the village and then do the similar things? Can they learn as much as they can here?
I think each village can organize not so much a camp, but organize a group within themselves to be able to do this.
Does it mean that their even lifestyle, even in a village, are sort of away from sense of community and then something?
Yeah, I think so, because what they've also got, what's harder about that is it's harder to get the focus of the children, because they've got TV, they've got telephones, they've got their electronic games, you know. Whereas a camp like this here, you're away from it. You've got their attention. And you have a little bit better control over those students, because they're under a program. And they know this, you know, and they're given, you know, the first thing that they, when they come to camp, they're given the rules of the camp. And they know what to do, you know. And you've got their attention, because they're, you know, there's no TV to run home, there's no mama to run home to, you know. Of course, some of the parents are here, but then they, you know, like myself, you know, when my grandson comes up and asks me something about program, I said, you go ask Olga or Carly. Mm-hmm. I said, they're, you know, that's who you're working under. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't, you know, I don't try to let them come and think they can.
I see.
Do something else because I'm here, you
right.
know.
Uh-huh.
So you ask them, you're under their program. Mm-hmm. You know, you go what they want you to do.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel Richard, what do you feel Richard learning?
I think he's learning, I know he likes seal meat.
Mm-hmm.
He likes seal meat. And I think learning about the environment.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's learning to be one with the environment. And that's what it is, you know.
Good.
What's more valuable? Money is not, you know, money has never been a value to our native people. Our value has been the land and the sea. Money was there when you made it to spend. You know, one of the things that, you know, we've been criticized for as native people, oh, those natives, when they get money, all they do is drink. Well, you know, when they saw that money, they spent it and they drank it. They bought their clothes, they bought their food, you know, what little food, and they bought the clothes. But they didn't need it for survival. It wasn't survival thing for them, for us. I should say, it wasn't a survival for us. Our land and sea is our survival. Whereas city people, money is very much a surviving tool for them. And then I'm not saying that's bad, it's just a difference, you know, between some cultures or environment, you know. So we've been criticized for not saving our money for the future, you know, and maybe we should have, but and maybe some have, but then, you know, it's just the idea that it has not been a value to the native people. The land and the sea are is our value, our surviving tool.
Great, Julie. Thank you very much for your time.